everyone. Welcome to today's talk. Sorry to interrupt your lunch, but I'm just going to get this moving. I'm Nan Hee-in, a freelance journalist. I'm also a correspondent governor of the FCC. But before I begin, can I just remind everyone to turn off your phones and put it on silent mode, please. Now, we're about to get a rare window into the city's criminal justice system and what it's like to be incarcerated here, with today's talk about life in Hong Kong prisons. Our speaker, Tobias Bradner, is an ordained pastor of the Reformed Church. He's had access to prisons both in Switzerland and in Hong Kong for many years in the capacity of prison chaplain. In Hong Kong, he served as prison chaplain for the last 18 years. The speaker will talk about the city's correctional services system, the experience for inmates. He'll also talk about certain correctional service policies that warrants more critical attention and discussion. Bradner is also a religious scholar with a PhD in theology. He's also an associate professor at the Department of Cultural and Religious Studies of the Chinese University of Hong Kong. He's also published a book about religious life in prison titled Beyond the Walls of Separation, Christian Faith and Ministry in Prison, which is available right here. Everyone, let's give a warm welcome to Tobias Bradner.
Ladies and gentlemen, thank you very much for coming here. I am very honored that such a good number of people come here. Thank you, of course, to the host for inviting me. It's, of course, a great honor to be at this prestigious place. Let me first introduce myself. I came here 19 years ago in 1996. I was before that. I did my PhD in Zurich, and I was a prison chaplain in Switzerland. And when I came here in 96, I spent the first 1 or 2 years more or less full time with learning Cantonese. I'm still learning. I had the chance to learn to spend a lot of time in prison, where the people have a lot of time. So they were always very patient with me when I tried to stutter in Chinese. And so I had the opportunity to learn more. So since 98, I've been a full-time chaplain, and then about 6 years ago, I became a kind of a full-time academic, but part-time I still go 1 day or sometimes 2 days per week to prison, mostly to Stanley Prison or to Sek Bik in Lantau or Siu Lam and some others occasionally. I remember right, I was here about 10 years ago, and if I remember correctly, I spoke at that time more on the religious side of my ministry. Of course, probably hardly any one of you was here at that time, but even then, I want to speak today more a bit on the institutional side. How is life for inmates? What is prison about? And of course, all of you have your images of prison. I mean, there is a lot of talk about prison in newspapers whenever somebody famous enters prison, but the reality is much less known. But still, before going there to talk about the reality of prison, I like to spend some give some words about what does actually a prison chaplain do all day long. Now, essentially, I do two things. The first thing is doing counseling. That's what I regard as the most important thing. I go around through all the sections of a prison into their workshops. The inmates, most of the inmates work during the day, and I talk to them individually, sometimes in small groups, sometimes in public. Sometimes I can take them into a small room where I can talk more privately. And I talk about whatever issues come up from their side. So I am not the one who is giving the topic of the talk, so it does not necessarily need to be a religious topic, not at all. Essentially, a lot of my counseling is simply establishing relationship, and by establishing relationship, communicate the value of forgiveness, which is a basic Christian value. And the other side of what I do is I conduct worships, including, of course, also the Holy Communion on a regular basis, so that people who are interested to join or who are already Christians, they can join. They are free. It's their free choice whether they join or not. So among them, there are a lot of people who are already Christians or who have become Christians during their time in prison. And some others, they are simply going because it's too boring in prison. One of the advantages for the chaplain is that it's terribly boring in prison. So a famous inmate once told me, it is so boring here that I even speak to the prison chaplain. Now, first let us think a little bit about who are the people in prison. Out there are a lot of different theories about who people in prison are. None of the theories that have been developed in the past century about who inmates are really convincing. The fact is, or this, I'm not a sociologist, but and I didn't do kind of sociological research, but from my long period of interaction, it's simply my impression is that the people in prison, they are ordinary people, they are not the others, but people like you and me. Some of them may be members of the FCC, or possibly of another club, or they are not. They may be living in a housing estate, or in village houses, or elsewhere. They may be immigrants from China, they may be traders from Africa, tremendous increase of trade of people from Africa in the past 10, 15 years, tremendous increase. Or they may be local Hong Kong people. About 80%, 70 to 80% of the local population are from Hong Kong. I have some numbers later. They may be local entrepreneurs or they may be jobless. They may be rightly in prison or some of them are also, we should take this into account, wrongly incarcerated. Now, of course, they do to a certain extent share certain experiences in common. Many of them do indeed come from broken families. Many of them have a history of abuse, sexual abuse, substance abuse, violence, violent upbringing. Many of these people are greedy, as much as probably in this room, including myself, many people are greedy in our society. They are not, this is important to me, they are not simply heartless individuals. Of course, there are these famous cases where people committed a violent crime that appear tremendously heartless, but by far the most of the people, they are not heartless. Many of them are actually very passionate, but they possibly do not control their passion in a good way. They are not immoral people, but they possibly twisted moral at some specific place. Or, in other words said, prisoners are not to be equaled with criminals. Prisoners are ordinary people in very extraordinary circumstances. This pyramid shall help us to understand why I emphasize so much that prisoners does not equal criminals. First of all, if we say prisoners are criminals, we believe that everyone inside there is really guilty. Now, everyone has been convicted, but that does not, even if it's in possibly 95% true, we have to keep in mind that some of them might be convicted wrongly. This is always a possibility in a system that is ruled by people. This is simply a pyramid of different levels of crime. There is, of course, the lowest level of simply committing a sin or a violation of rules. You cross the road and so on, which is, of course, not leading to imprisonment. Then you have a lot of legal violations. Violations that are, however, not illegal but legal, like, for instance, sale of legal drugs. Remember that what we regard as illegal drugs nowadays have at some point in history been legal drugs. So it is our society's decision to regard certain drugs as illegal while others are still legal. Killing in war is of course, also such a violation that is legal. Then the next category, crimes that are not reported to police. Remember, a huge amount of crimes are not reported. Another good number of crimes are reported but do not end in an arrest. And then there are those who are arrested but not sentenced, and only a small number. Estimation from the US context say only around 1.5% of committed felonies lead to imprisonment. So what I want to say with this is that the problem of crime is far larger than the people in prison. Or this leads me to two basic problems of imprisonment or of prison as an institution. Now this still has nothing to do with Hong Kong. This is a general problem. The first problem is the prison is not only a physical, but also a social construction that creates a harmful dualism between those inside and us outside. As such, the prison deceives. It creates the impression that there, in these places far remote from our good society, the problem of crime and sin, which is the same, interestingly, in Chinese, there it is confined. And these high walls, I mean, they are not necessarily so high, but they are symbolically powerful as creating a dividing line between the so-called good people outside and the so-called bad people inside. But this chart that I just showed you tried to remind you reality is, of course, not that simple, not that black and white. And secondly, this is again a general problem of prison. Prison is harmful. It is an artificial and harmful environment where many people say, if you are not a criminal when you enter prison, you may well end up being one when you leave the prison. I do not agree with that. There are a lot of good people in prison. A lot of them come out as good people. But the prison system tries hard to make you bad. It tears families apart. And it reduces the inmates' employability. Now, I am very critical about the system of prison in general and about the system in Hong Kong in particular. Still, I like to say, first of all, I like to express my gratitude to the Correctional Service Department in Hong Kong that they allow me to go in and out regularly, and they are supportive. And secondly, I like also to mention that the Hong Kong prison system is not as such a bad system. It's not worse than elsewhere. In many ways, it's even better. In terms of recidivism, violence in prison, it is a rather good system. If I had to choose where to be in prison within the Asian context, I might choose Hong Kong. And if I had to choose between Hong Kong or the US, I would probably even still choose Hong Kong rather than the US prison. Personally, I would choose the European system, which is probably the most liberal in this regard. If you have characterizes the system in Hong Kong is that there is a tremendous supervision in all aspects of prison life. And the positive outcome of this is that there is a high level of equality and fairness and safety in prison. So Hong Kong prisons are generally safe with relatively little internal violence, but the price that is paid for it is that there is a very strong internal restriction of freedom. The other extreme would be the Latin American concept, where essentially you have a wall around the compound, and this wall you cannot get out, but inside everything is possible as long as you have power or as long as you have money. So you can have everything inside. Here in Hong Kong, the system is fair. People, whether rich or poor, are treated more or less the same. Now, interestingly, in the last 15 years that I thoroughly observed the system, the number of inmates has tremendously decreased from around 13,000 at its peak, or 13,500, to 9,000, around 9,200. Because this means a kind of average ratio of inmates to the overall population. It is far, far lower than, of course, the record holder US or Russia, also very high, but higher than many European countries. So it's relatively well located. Please note that, interestingly, the number of inmates went down, but the number of staff remained the same, so that the costs per day went up within the last 15 years by about 50%. Maybe 10 years ago it was 600 Hong Kong dollars per day, now it's about 960, according to my most recent calculations. Now, how do inmates live? One way of describing is by describing that they are some basic deprivations. Deprivations, of course, of liberty, freedom, of goods and services, of autonomy, security, and of heterosexual relationships. This is has been described by a scholar named Sykes already 60 years ago. Not much has changed since then. This was an observation from the US. It's roughly the same here in Hong Kong. You live as a male inmate, you live in a completely male environment, which is, I think, rather unhealthy. Also in terms of your thinking, in terms of your relationships, it is, in the US particularly, it's a much more unsafe system than here. But still in prison, you have a less sense of security than you have elsewhere of outside. Then another description would be to describe it as a totalitarian institution. It means that there is a radically uneven distribution of power. But of course, there is also an area of cooperation. There is a certain level of power sharing. You cannot have a staff member pushing every inmate to do every single act. And in this regard, interestingly, the triads, they play quite an interesting role. The triads, they are part of the prison culture. Of course, they are also part of the subculture, partly doing illegal things, but they are also part of the social fabric of prison society, which means that most inmates, if not all, it's not perfectly all, but 95% of the inmates, even if they are outside, not member of the triads, they would have to join a triad group simply to be kind of allocated part of prison society, to be allocated a place where to eat, to be allocated time to do sport, and so on. So the triads, they help the staff maintain a certain level of order within prison. Of course, this is not official way of how it goes, but this is the unofficial way how it goes, and it actually makes sense. There is nothing illegal with that. Another description would be to say that it is an environment where there is a lot of punishment but very little reward. And this is now something that very specifically applies to Hong Kong, where there is very little reward for performing well, while there is a lot of chance for punishment. I will come back to that later. Now, what is prison life more also about? It is a bit about being standardized. I chose this picture just from a couple of days ago. There was the information in the newspaper that Chiang Mo is suing the CSD because they cut his hair off. And this is actually a very interesting case because it's actually a practice that doesn't make any sense, and it goes, of course, also against gender equality. Women are allowed, female inmates are allowed to keep their long hair. Male inmates are not. The mantra for the CSD is always it's for security issues, and accordingly, the people at the court, they argue, the CSD people, they argued with the chance that you could strangulate yourself with your hair, or you could attack somebody with your hair, or whatever. It's rather funny. I'm not a lawyer, but I very much hope that he wins this case, because it's also it's an issue that touches on a basic nerve. The CSD or prison systems in general, they like to standardize people. They are standardized, first of all, of course, by their number. They are not called a name, but the number. Secondly, by their clothes, and thirdly, the hairstyle is part of this standardization and being pushed into a kind of pattern of being male. A proper man is there with short hair. something that characterizes the specific Hong Kong prison system is that there is very little space for personal creativity. The work that the inmates do is of very low quality. Mostly people idle. They do their workload that they are legal that they have to do. They do it usually within 1 or 2 hours of a day, and the rest of the day they hang around doing not much, talking. That's exactly when I come in and where I am part of the entertainment. My friend who introduced me is in charge of introducing people who are from the entertainment industry, so she was rightly chosen to introduce me. I am partly, of course, a break in their tremendous sense of boredom and idleness. But it's also, of course, also the approach for them. They are grateful for a visitor from outside because they experience something of normality, a kind of normality that enters prison and that they are detached from. There is a lack of learning. Rather, people unlearn their skills. There is also part of the prison system that there are a lot of rules exist, but they are not necessarily always implemented. But whenever you are in a bad relationship with an officer, they will always find a reason to punish you because there are so many rules that you are unable to keep, so that it's naturally happens that you will find that they will find a chance to punish you. It's a loveless environment, which is also, of course, expressed in the architecture and design. The design of the whole environment. There is it is often very noisy. There are no colors. Everything is gray in gray. There is no view, although many of these prisons are located in very beautiful areas, but of course you don't have windows to look at the sea. You are very much, I mean, of course, that's what incarceration is about. Yes, the food is tremendously boring. Part of my criticism of the CSD is that while Hong Kong society has changed tremendously in the past 20 years, Hong Kong has the prison system has not changed a bit. I mean, in terms of rhetoric, there has been quite a bit of change, but there are some efforts to cooperate with local companies, to encourage local companies to employ ex-inmates, but the government itself, being a bad example, still doesn't employ ex-inmates because they think they are not good enough to be employed. So they are not very logical in their own outreach to the community. And the food is one example of lovelessness and of this lack of development. People eat still exactly the same food as 20 years ago. And some of the inmates have been in prison 20 years. So they eat every second day or every third day exactly the same food. So that's why that's something that makes them suffer maybe the most. Now maybe just some words about how do inmates cope now, and how does the institution cope. Now the institution tries to mitigate the hardship of imprisonment by giving a little bit of hope. One example is that inmates who study during their imprisonment, and if they are successful in the exams, they will have the chance to invite their family members, one or two of them, for an open certificate ceremony where they can spend 1 or 2 hours with them, have a lunch, simple lunch with them, and be in touch contact, in physical contact. Normally, in most of the institutions, there is no physical contact between inmates and their family members. So this is a tiny little bit of hope, but there has nothing been developed beyond that. Inmates respond with some with withdrawal, some with rebellion, a small number actually, most of them with colonization, which means they internalize their being kind of simply an inmate, and they are submit to the in obedience to the overwhelming system. There are triad societies which are parts of this culture. Gambling, a lot of gambling, less nowadays than 10 years ago. The CSD has cracked down very much on that. But gambling is, of course, an expression of this tremendous sense of boredom. And then there is some creativity. Some people engage in painting, in writing, or some in food. There is, I remember once I wanted to bring in some cake for a special, I think it was a Christian festive day. And I was, first of all, the CSD allowed me, but then eventually they told me, no, it's not allowed. And then I was a bit frustrated that I wasn't allowed to bring in some special food for this holiday. And then when I came in, the inmates had baked a cake for me, which was absolutely amazing. So they were able to bake a cake by buying some specific items that they are allowed to buy, and they baked it, I think, underneath the washing machine or something, where there was some heat, or maybe under iron for ironing clothes. So they are very ingenious about how to produce some special food to make their day a bit more special. They engage in studies, and of course, a lot of them engage in religious activities, which they have time for in this period of boredom. Now, maybe just to end, a few words about what can be changed. There are two levels. On one hand side, it's about the judiciary, where changes could happen. More importantly, probably, in the area of prison management. One of the problems of the prison system in Hong Kong is that there is very little incentive given to perform well, to make efforts, to adjust to the prison environment. There is little, even if you are doing very well, you then won't get out earlier. And my ongoing suggestion to the CSD, but I haven't been heard until now, would be to be more generous in terms of furlough system, conjugal visits, parole system, and so on. In many constituencies around the world, you have generous furlough systems where people, inmates who are not violent, may go out once a month to visit their family to maintain a family life. It will be easier then for them also to be reintegrated into society. We could allow more peer teaching. As you know, there are highly intelligent people in prison. They could be used to teach other inmates. There would be a lot of opportunities for communal work for low security inmates. Instead of simply incarcerating them, they could go out for beach cleanings, for public maintenance work in country parks, and so on. The isolation confinement could be reduced, and still a high number of inmates are in high security institutions in Hong Kong. This is not necessary. You could have many of them actually serve in low security institutions. This is an image from the isolation confinement where I always also go to say hello to every individual one, where some of the isolated inmates, they are there for their own protection. Some are there because they have committed violated some internal prison rules. Yeah, so this is what I would like to share with you. I thank you for your interest, and we will have some time for question and answer.
Tobias, it's now time for Q&As. Does anyone have any questions? Could you raise your hand and identify yourself and the organization you're with? Angus?
I'm Angus Forsyth. I'm a lawyer in practice in Hong Kong. I'm very interested to hear what you had to say about the operations of triads in the prison system. You indicate that there's some kind of internal triad influence, and some of the inmates may be triad members, and presumably they are answerable to some triad big shot outside the prison in the way in which they conduct themselves and conduct the good order of the internal operation of the prison. So perhaps you can enlarge a bit on that and whether the triad influence is beneficial, and if it is beneficial, then should it be encouraged?
Well, I wouldn't go so far to say it should be encouraged, but I don't think it's as such very harmful. There are four triad groups, or actually five, if you add the one that Dai Hun. Dai Hun is the one that guards the mainland inmates, and then there are four local triad groups, which are where
outside of prison, we have more than four triad groups, but some of them are kind of merging together into one group with inside. And usually they elect one of their, I mean, these are internal elections, but quite democratically, actually, probably more democratic than Hong Kong society outside. They elect their kind of Dai Lo, their big brother, and who is then also, to a certain extent, the kind of the spokesperson when there are issues. So I have, in the 18 years that I've nearly daily seen a prison reality, I have hardly ever seen anyone raising their hands when there is a JP or a high commissioner or so visiting prison. Maybe some of you are JPs here, and it's hardly ever that you are asked something, that there is a request made, because if you are make a kind of such a request, you will be it's not liked by the system, because then they have to follow up. It causes a lot of work. So instead, the system works with these dialogue with the big brothers from the internal groups. So as such, they are not yet harmful. But of course, there are relationships to outside triad groups, and this is particularly dangerous in cases, for instance, where prosecution witness cases or internal kind of conflicts, where external conflicts can also be carried into the prison. But of course, the prison system has some intelligence about who is critical with whom, and they try to avoid it. Overall, there's very little violence in Hong Kong prisons.
Any more questions? Oh, wow, quite a few. Okay, gentleman at the back. Wait for the microphone.
Thank you. Andrew McGeoch, also a lawyer, from Mayor Brown GSM. You commented that the level of recidivism is, you hinted, quite low.
Yes.
Would you want to comment on why that is the case? And is it the fact that prisons are pretty ghastly, they don't want to end up back in there again? I'm sure that's a rather slightly simplistic answer, but I'm sure you got some feedback on that.
Yes. First of all, these are the official numbers which claim that recidivism is low. The problem with recidivism is it's very difficult how to measure it. There are many different ways, I'm not really sure that it's true. If it's true, then one of the reasons might be that the prison sentences here are tremendously long. That would be surely one reason. And normally, if you look at sociologically, a lot of crime happens in a certain age period, particularly between 16 and 25, and afterwards it goes very much down. But if during this time you catch a long sentence, the chance that you are committing a new crime after your release is relatively low. That's the second reason. And thirdly, the first point was simply, I'm not sure, but it's true. Secondly, long sentences. Thirdly, it is probably, it's a very tough system here in Hong Kong, very loveless. And I once asked people, when there was such a decrease in numbers of inmates, asked one of the inmates jokingly, "Hey, what happens? Don't people like to go to prison anymore?" And he said, "They don't like to go to prison in Hong Kong anymore." So it seems that there are some more people going up in China to prison. But that was maybe 2 years ago. So maybe nowadays, with the present atmosphere, things have also changed, because there was, of course, much more prison corruption up in China.
Any more questions? This gentleman there.
Hi, hello. My name's Stuart Heber. I'm a journalist member. I've heard it said, admittedly, in the European context, that if you removed those with serious mental health difficulties and those with serious drug and substance abuse problems from our prisons, half of them would be empty. How much does that apply to Hong Kong in your experience?
Oh, I don't know, but it would be a lot. I mean, I am very much in favor of legalizing, I mean, very much under restrictions, but legalizing drugs. It would empty the prisons, and I think the whole prohibition system is simply a way to make for the triads and other illegal groups to make money. I mean, I'm sad that this is still not an issue that is discussed, but I think the whole system doesn't make sense.
Yeah, I just finished a book on drug addiction, but largely in the United States. Paul Schulte, I have my own company.
in U.S. prisons, it's about 80% of crimes of people who are in jail are drug related.
I would guess there's something similar here, yeah.
And so one of the mayors of Los Angeles called Twin Towers, the L.A. County Jail, the largest mental health facility in the United States. And so I have a feeling that the drug epidemic is going to get really out of hand in Hong Kong right now and in the next several years. And so I guess my question is there an awareness or a wake-up call for the government to try to create programs to allow people to, as in the United States, to avoid jail by doing deferral to drug treatment programs?
Probably you know eventually more about it than I myself, because this is not strictly speaking an issue of the prison system, but rather of outside community awareness and so on. But I would agree with you that it's whether it's 80% as a rough guess, I would have probably said 70% are somehow related to it. Before you also ask about mental illnesses, I would rather think it's a small number, but of course there are. It's a rather small number, but I think there is of course also some. I don't know how many percent.
Gentleman over there.
Thank you. I'm Jonathan Midgley, and I'm a criminal defense lawyer. So once in a blue moon, I see the inside of a prison. Can I just comment on the falling prison population and suggest one of the reasons for that, in fact, is that the police have slowly lost interest, relatively speaking, in making arrests. There are reasons for that. And so it's not a reduction in crime, I'm afraid. It's a reduction in the police interest in bringing them to justice. The question I have, though, is this. Many of us here will agree that there should be changes, and the system is, I'm afraid, very Victorian. And it's not conducive to preparing people for when they leave prison. It really is just a detention. Have you managed to find out yet where the pressure should be brought to make the changes, because I have not.
Well, I mean, ideally, I would think the Secretary for Security, the Commissioner. The problem is that these people, they have this civil servants mentality. They, until they are number one, they are always trying to please the one above you, so they are never trying to really be innovative. And once they have reached the position of number one, they can only serve 1 or 2 years more, and they have so much internalized this conservative mindset that nothing can be expected of them anymore, and possibly they even have the eye on becoming entering the security bureau after their retirement from the CSD. So they are hopeless people. I would think, I talk to occasionally to legislative counselors, but the problem with prison is it's not the major issue, and that's somehow sad, because these are a significant number, 9,000 people who are inside. But it's not just them. All of them have somehow a family, parents, wife, husband, children. There are several 10,000 people directly affected by the prison, and nobody thinks about it because it's not the proper constituency. So I would think it's the political channels. The media would play a role, I think. Actually, the media would play, there are some media people here, obviously. They would play a role, I think. There is an issue which is close to my heart recently, because there has been such an increase in numbers of African inmates. There is no transfer agreement with Tanzanians. When I started here, there was one or two or three, four African inmates. Now there are about, 200, 300, 400. A tremendous number of African inmates. None came from Tanzania. Now we have 100 or 200 Tanzanian inmates. I don't know why. There are some reasons. But there is no effort made to go to speak to the authorities in Tanzania and to say, hey, publish something in the newspapers. Don't come to Hong Kong. We have a harsh punishment, tough punishment system with those who are already here. Why don't they talk to them and try to bring them back to Tanzania? It would be better for the taxpayer here in Hong Kong. It would be better for the inmates themselves. I think the media would play a role there, and of course the legislative councillors.
And the media box there.
Hi, Ernst Herb, Swiss journalist. Recently we have seen high profile cases you spoke now about Africans, poor people here. We saw recently high profile cases where people were convicted from long, long terms. I'm aware that you will not be able to talk on individual cases, but can you, over the years, you have seen some of these very powerful, mighty people fall and ending up in prison. Can you describe a little bit their situation, their daily life?
Can you come out so that the microphone? Yes.
Can you explain a little bit what's their daily life of these people, the very prominent prisoners, ex-powerful, very wealthy people, and what can be? Are they suffering the same way in prison, or do they suffer more or less?
Yes, I cannot speak about the individual inmates, but generally speaking, and I really would like to express my appreciation for the CSD in this regard. The CSD is extremely fair. No matter whether you are famous or not famous, you are essentially treated the same. Now, some very famous inmates may possibly be put into isolation confinement for their own protection. But this is always something that is up for discussion between the concerned inmate and the Bo-Onjo, the security people within the prison, to make an assessment whether you should be in isolation confinement or in a workshop. There are some famous business people are also in an ordinary workshop, but there are a few workshops in Stanley Prison, for instance, where there is a relatively little interaction with other inmates, and where you have a kind of, it's like the big boss workshop where you have a lot of financial crimes. What I have observed through the past 15 years is increase in commercial crimes sentencing, which is in principle says something about probably improved abilities of the prosecutor's side within the judiciary to have the tools and the knowledge, the know-how to prosecute commercial crimes. But I cannot speak about individual cases.
Do we have any more questions? Oh, there's one far at the end.
Are there any differences between the treatment of foreigners against locals or non-Cantonese speaking people?
Two small ways. The foreigners, they are allowed to have different kind of food, a different diet, a Western diet, which I would personally think is slightly better than the other one, but I mean it's really on a very low level better. Secondly, the disadvantage of the Westerners is that they are not eligible for the parole system, which I think is bad, because at least this gives again some hope to some inmates, the parole system, which means that you could leave the prison instead of the standard 2/3 of your sentence, you could leave it after 1/2 of the sentence. But so-called ON, overseas nationals, they are not eligible. Otherwise, I would say they are treated very much the same. Again, this is positive from the CSD.
Got a gentleman at the back there.
Hi, my name is Nick, and actually I serve alongside Tobias, have in the past, so I should qualify who I am. But I actually have a couple of questions regarding the fair treatment of prisoners. In my experience, I've seen, you know, some kind of favoritism where, you know, a prisoner maybe is allowed certain privileges that may not be available to others. For example, I've had prisoners call me on the telephone from prison inside, you know, and told that they have, you know, like a huge allocation of free time to call. Others that have had things, you know, allowed to have bound books delivered to them, for example, which is generally something that's not allowed. Others that have, you know, recording devices allowed into their cell.
I'm very surprised.
A cassette player, I should say.
You are allowed to have a cassette player if you do it for study purposes. Right. And then you may have occasionally, I mean, there's, of course, there are these kind of up and downs. I would say it's not on a systematic level. There are, of course, some smart inmates. Just yesterday, another volunteer told me she got a phone call from an inmate who used his time to call. Foreign inmates, they are allowed, please, it's crazy, 10 minutes of phone calls every 2 months to their family back home. Now, there are some inmates who use this time to rather call a friend here in Hong Kong. So you may be the one. But that's surely not the usual thing, and that means he was very smart to choose a different phone number or so.
And, And the other one is regarding the long-term sentencing and lack of parole. I've known prisoners who've been in prison, overseas nationals, for 25 years. Yeah. Men who have been convicted of crimes when they were 17 or 18 years old, sentenced to life in prison. And they're coming from countries like Vietnam or India, where I still think, in the case of India, there is no treaty existing that allows for the transfer. And it's quite disheartening for these men, as you can imagine, not having any clue as to when they might be released, or if ever. And I just wonder, you know, is the CSD or is the Hong Kong government doing anything proactively to change that?
Yeah, well, this is actually an issue. I had it noted. It was a bit quick in the end. That has not strictly speaking to do with the CSD, but with the judiciary. Those on a life sentence, they get the commutation of their sentence to a determinate sentence decided by a statutory judiciary body, namely the Long Sentences Review Board. And usually it happens sometime around 25, 27 years or so. But you have no guarantee. That's part of the system. I think it's a relatively bad system, but it is so. The problem there with the Long Sentence Review Board is that also those who are on a drug on a long drug sentence, standard is 14 years if you plead guilty, also have to go through this board. But within the 18 years that I've served here, I've never seen anyone receive a reduction by this Long Sentence Review Board. So either it's a silly system or it's a waste of resources, because they always have to go, each one of them has to be reviewed. The other cases, I don't think they are standard cases, the ones you mentioned. And thirdly, transfer agreements are not necessary for transfers. You can do a transfer on an ad hoc basis, but of course it would be better to have a regular transfer agreement with another judiciary.
Okay, we're a little over time, so I'm afraid we're going to have to close this event. So thank you very much, Tobias. It was an eye-opening talk.
Thank you very much. So if you want to buy a book there, it's more about the spiritual perspective or about the spiritual side of my work, but also a lot about how is prison reality inside. Have a look at it.
There you go.
Thank you. Thank you.